Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning, the 9th of November. First hour of the program today, Issue 2, also known as Senate Bill 5, which failed to win voter support and was defeated by a wide margin in Ohio yesterday, 61% to 39%. It means that the bill will not go into effect. Parts of the law may not be dead in the long run, and we'll talk about that this hour. Much of the public attention centered on the law's ban on collective bargaining for public employees, but there were also provisions to require public employees to contribute to their health care and pension benefits. Those parts of the law were more popular, along with pushing merit pay for teachers, and those proposals all polled pretty well in the run-up to the election. We're going to be looking at this vote and how significant it is, what it means for the state of Ohio, what it means for the state of Wisconsin, and what it means for this particular issue, which has been a prominent part of Republican governors' agenda in some states in this country. We'll have two guests with us. Professor David Cohen joins us at the top of the show, professor of political science and fellow in the Ray Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. He is a native of Milwaukee, and he earned his BA in political science and international relations at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Higher degrees elsewhere, but there are a lot of people with Madison connections who we have as guests. He teaches courses and has published research on the American presidency, Congress, and Homeland Security. He is the co-author of Buckeye Battleground, Ohio Campaigns and Elections in the 21st Century. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm sure many of you watch this vote fairly carefully because of what is happening in the state of Wisconsin, and we'll talk about whether or not there is something to be learned from Ohio and Wisconsin or if they are completely different entities. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Lines are open for you right now. Hello, Professor Cohen. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, 61 to 39%, a pretty large margin of defeat here. Why was it so large?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't a squeaker, that's for sure. And it was, you know, they were able to call it pretty much right away. Well, I think the reason it was so large is, you know, the Ohio GOP did the impossible. They woke really a slumbering Democratic Party, Democratic base, the unions, with this legislation. A lot of people in the state, including Republicans and conservatives, felt that the legislation went just way too far. The right to collectively bargain in general. And, you know, you saw the same reaction in Ohio that you did in Wisconsin. It didn't get as much of a of the national attention as what was happening in Madison and Milwaukee and other places, but there was a similar reaction here. And, you know, when they turned in the signatures for the referendum campaign, they actually turned in over 1 million signatures, which was a record for putting anything on the ballot.
When you say a lot of Republicans and conservatives thought the bill had gone too far, were they then the margin of victory that they voted against it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the fact you got a 22-point margin of victory, and that meant, you know, certainly most of the Democrats were against SB 5. Certainly the unions, but you needed a lot of independents and some crossover Republicans. And I know just in my conversations with, you know, individually with Republicans and conservatives, that you know, the great majority of them were really stunned that the their party had gone quite so far with this legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Even you know, seeing the reaction in Wisconsin, that they continued to push it through, and so you had a number of people crossing party lines.
And why do you think they continued to push it through?
Well, I think, as you said at the outset, I don't think this has to do just with Ohio. This is a concerted effort to, you know, strike at the heart of collective bargaining and make some reforms in those areas in a number of states. And so it's an agenda, and it's happening in those states that were, after the 2010 elections, swung Republican.
And is it too simplistic to say a major reason is because they're trying to get rid of a Democratic base so that they will have more of a hold on power, or is it beyond that?
Oh, I don't think that's too simplistic at all. I mean, I think it really comes down to politics. And, you know, the unions really are the lifeblood of the Democratic Party right now. And if you can strike at the power and their ability to organize and raise money, you really strike a blow at the Democratic Party itself, and you know, the Republican Party would tighten its grip on power.
Are there a lot of union members in Ohio more so than in other states?
Yes, it's a very unionized state, and it has a long history of being a unionized state. And this collective bargaining law that issue 2 would have and SB 5 would have struck down goes back to I believe 1983.
Mm-hmm. We are hearing reports that there are other parts of the bill that pulled better than putting an end to collective bargaining, merit pay for teachers, mm-hmm. Public employees paying more for their pensions. Do you imagine that the governor will now push for that part of the bill that's more popular?
Sure. I mean, if you look at Quinnipiac and some of the other polls, there are certainly parts of the SB 5 legislation that are popular with Ohioans. And I would be surprised if the governor and the GOP didn't, you know, for instance, try and push those popular parts of the bill, such as, you know, contributing, you know, 10% for retirement and 15% towards health care costs. Although, you know, I do have to say many public employees, in fact, I believe most public employees in Ohio already pay that. But and in terms of merit-based pay, I think that's fairly popular. I would be surprised if they didn't try to push some of the more popular parts of the bill. But you know, I've also heard that the GOP may in fact try and push pretty much all parts of the bill, just split it up into several different pieces, so that it would make it harder for Democrats to have all those issues be on in separate referendums.
Mm. The governor said that he's going to take a deep breath here. I'm wondering, after he's taken his deep breath, what he's thinking.
You know, that's a good question. Like I said, I mean, you know, even before the defeat, Republicans were talking about as if it was going to be defeated, and that they would not be deterred, and that they would go ahead and split this bill up and try and pass it piecemeal. So I think they were probably surprised, the GOP was probably surprised and disheartened by the margin of defeat. I think many observers were expecting about a 10 or 15-point defeat. 22 points is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm. I had heard somewhere, I can't remember where, in following this story before the election, that the polling was quite different until police and firefighters started doing ads, that the inclusion of those groups of people in this whole slam on collective bargaining was the part of it that put it down to defeat.
Well, you know, and I think even had police and firefighters and other safety forces not been included, you know, it still would have had a tough time getting passed.
Really?
Well, and just look at, you know, Wisconsin's, you know, case.
Right.
Police and firefighters were not included, but you know, those unions, you know, rallied to the defense of the other public employee unions, and so I think that, you know, a similar thing might have happened here. But I think it was a tremendous tactical error, and a number of people just really openly wondered why in the world would you include the safety forces, and really the police and firefighters of all the entities in this fight, I think, were the most active and most vocal, and their ads were the most effective.
Mm-hmm. So where does this put other Republican governors who have similar agendas? What does this vote do to their agendas, and what are they thinking today?
Oh, I think it's a big warning to other Republican governors that may have similar designs. Although I think we've already seen that in the states. We've already seen those efforts, you know, in a number of the other states. Some have been successful, some haven't. So I think at this point, especially going into a presidential election year, I don't think you're going to see other states attempt to do something quite as radical as what the Ohio GOP attempted to do here.
And the governor of Ohio is going to be governor for another of 3 years. Does he have to really change his agenda fairly radically?
I don't know. I mean, Governor Kasich is very unpopular here. His approval rating is in the mid to low 30s. And it's been pretty consistent after his election, especially after he got involved with Senate Bill 5. And, you know, the really interesting part about this whole thing is, you know, he could have had a very hands-off strategy when it came to this bill. But instead, over the last several weeks, he has really taken ownership. Even knowing and looking at the polls that it was going to have a difficult time, Kasich has very much taken ownership of this. He crisscrossed the state and made speeches in support of Senate Bill 5. And in fact, even last night, he gave a concession speech, which is very odd because, you know, this was a joint effort, not just by the governor, but also by the state legislature. Now, you know, he did very much lobby and push through this legislation, through the legislature, when it looked like it wasn't going to pass. And it only passed in the Ohio State Senate by one vote, 17-16. Much of that had to do with Kasich, you know, twisting arms.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been, you know, at the forefront of this process from the start. He could have backed off and really let others take the fall for it, but he, you know, he took responsibility for it.
We welcome phone calls. We're talking about what happened in Ohio yesterday, where issue two failed to win the support of voters and went down to a pretty resounding defeat, 61% to 39%. Your thoughts about the significance of this vote, and does it mean anything in terms of a potential recall of the governor in the state of Wisconsin? Are they entirely different? Do you see this as a real strong movement by the Democratic base, which will bode well for Democrats? Or is it because Ohio is a heavily union state and this particular governor went way too far in terms of offending not just union people, but a lot of people who live in Ohio, Republicans included? To your phone calls. Let's get them in as soon as we can. We will have another guest the second half hour of the program. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Joining us this first half hour is Professor David Cohn, who happens to be from Milwaukee originally, a professor of political science and fellow in the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program this Wednesday, the sex abuse scandal that has rocked Penn State. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Tom is our first caller. Hi, Tom.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was wondering what percentage of people in Ohio work for the government and what percentage are union that would change your vote there?
Got to say, I don't know. I don't have those statistics.
You know, because if our government is the largest employer in most places anymore,
mm-hmm.
so that's going to change how people's opinions are. In Wisconsin, I don't think we are that large, especially northern Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
as far as unions go. So we are for Walker, not against him, like a lot of people want him repealed.
Yeah, I mean, we have quite a few public employees in the state of Ohio. It's a very big state, 11 million people. I think it's twice as big as Wisconsin. You also have a lot of private sector unions in Ohio as well, but I don't have the exact percentages.
When you think about Wisconsin and what's going on in this state after the vote in Ohio, are there cautionary tales here, or are they entirely different situations?
Well, you know, they're similar in that you have freshman GOP governors, and you have, you know, take over by the Republican Party of the state legislatures, and they're also really presidential battleground states, although I would argue that Wisconsin's a little bit, leans a little bit more to the left, and Ohio leans a little bit more to the right. But I think that the major difference in Ohio is that in our state constitution here, we have a referendum process which allows individuals to gather signatures and put something on the ballot if there is a controversial measure, and it gives the people a chance to you know, vote yes or no. In Wisconsin, you all don't have that opportunity, and so that's why in Wisconsin you're seeing the recall elections because things that would be brought up in court. Because there are, you know, there isn't a referendum option there.
Mm-hmm. How many states have that referendum option? Is it a rarity, or
no? In fact, I think a majority of states do have a referendum process, or at least some sort of process. It just happens that Wisconsin doesn't have that.
Uh-huh. And to get one, you'd have to have a constitutional change?
Correct. You have to change the state constitution.
Mm-hmm. Janice in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Good morning, Kathleen, and your guests. I just comment quickly. It's just, I feel like the union people are going to have to start thinking that they are going to have to start paying into this system like the rest of us. And I don't have any pension. I said I don't have any health care benefits. I'm nothing. So I just feel like saying, you know what, you guys, they're powerful. Obviously, that's what happened in Ohio and now Wisconsin. And I think, you know what, everyone has to pay in because everybody's like, just gimme, gimme, gimme. And that's all they've been doing. And I don't blame Walker that says when they come to the table, they're not ready to make any concessions. They just want more. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Janice. Professor Cohen.
Well, you know, in Ohio, public employees were already paying into the system and paying for retirement benefits and paying for health care. I know in Wisconsin it was a little bit different in terms of the percentage of contributions of public employees. But, you know, when this process started earlier this year, the unions, said, you know, they are ready to come to the table and make concessions. And I think in many places, including Wisconsin and Ohio, the Republican Party, seeing that they had just come off a very big victory in 2010, decided to essentially go all in, to use a Texas Hold'em term, and to essentially try and run the table and really strike at the heart of collective bargaining itself. I think they missed a real opportunity to really come to the table and negotiate fair concessions, from the unions.
The governor and supporters of issue two said repeatedly that if this doesn't pass, watch out, you're going to see a lot of layoffs.
And that certainly is possible. I mean, in Ohio, the governor's budget has significantly decreased the amount of money that local governments are going to get over the life of the budget. And, local governments are going to have no choice except to make layoffs or to raise taxes. And we see, how successful local government and local schools are in terms of, raising more revenue. So likely there will be layoffs. But, there's a lot of dispute as to how much, Senate Bill 5 would have saved in terms of money.
Mm-hmm. John in Brookfield, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Cohen, in regards to the biggest differences between Ohio and Wisconsin regarding the fight over collective bargaining, what do you think, swayed the difference in Ohio?
Well, I think clearly it was the tactical mistake by the Republican Party here in Ohio to include firefighters and police. I think it was just an enormous tactical error. It really ginned up the Democratic base and especially the unions, especially those police and fire unions that were able to be so effective, not only in terms of advertising, but in terms of the grassroots campaign all across Ohio. That was really the most important difference, I think. And I think if they revisit the issue, I think they're probably going to exempt those safety forces.
Why did they put them in there? Do you know?
It is baffling because, a lot of people, again, that I talked to on the ground, Republicans, conservatives, were baffled by this. I'll give you an example. I have a friend that is actually a police officer, very conservative, always votes Republican. I know for a fact he was extremely angry that police officers and firefighters were included, and he ended up voting against the issue, too. And, if you listen to talk radio, there are a number of those safety forces that said, usually I vote Republican, but I got to vote against this. And I've heard a number of people saying that, when it comes time for to vote in 2012, they may vote Democratic.
Hmm. I was hearing on television shows that the average salary for a firefighter in Ohio is about $40,000. Does that seem about right to you?
That seems about right. There's going to be a lot of variation, and there's when people are quoting statistics about, you know, firefighter salaries or teacher salaries, you know, they always give the average. You know, there's a lot of variation. Those people that are starting out start out at a very low wage, and, you know, if you've been there 30 years, well, then you're going to make a higher wage, and it may, you know, push up those average salaries. But, yeah, 40 grand sounds about, sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Which is not a whole lot of money for the kind of work these people are doing. This is dangerous work.
It's dangerous work, and, you know, I think... for those that get angry that firefighters and police officers and teachers make a decent wage, I honestly don't understand it. Are those people not supposed to have a middle class lifestyle? Because I think, you know, they're very important parts of our American society and culture, and you need these people. And you know, frankly, one of the things that people get angry about is the decent benefit packages they get.
Right.
Well, if the average salary is fairly low, you have to entice people to come into that profession one way or the other, and for many people, it's the decent benefit.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain this? And there's a lot of this kind of sentiment out there. You've got something that I don't have. You've got a better health benefit than I have. You get more pension. You don't have to pay as much for your pension. I don't get any pension at all. You should have what I have, which is nothing.
Right, and you know, we heard that from one of the callers earlier, and I think the people that are pushing this agenda have done a very, very good job at essentially dividing and conquering, and getting middle class people to you know, argue against other middle class people, you know, for the benefits they have and the benefits that the other people might not have, and essentially the middle class is at war with each other, while you know the bigger you know moneyed interests sit and watch.
Mm-hmm. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning to your guest. I've been retired from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for 16 years now after working there for 39 years. I began there in 1957 before we had any representation when we were reduced to begging. And we ended up actually had to hire a lobbyist, a fellow by the name of Roy Cabista, who would go to bat for us to try and get us a few crumbs. And the legislators of both parties, you know, reliably nonpartisan, at election time would beat up on public employees and so forth. We finally got bargaining power in 1959. Ironically, I was transferred into a different unit then and was non-represented. But even us non-represented people always got everything that the union would negotiate. And the lady from La Crosse called in just a short time back and said it's about time we started paying for health insurance. Well, we were paying a good portion of our health insurance in retirement, but the benefits that we had, those particular things were negotiated in lieu of wage increases. My brother was in the labor pool in the paper mill. He always made more money than I did, and I was in until I eventually got a promotion later on and up into a higher level. But so there's a lot of misinformation going on here. And there's one final thing, and I see a strategy here on the part of the right. For one thing, I believe that the governor overreached, and instead of dividing people, I think he has multiplied us. He didn't know that. But the other thing is, we began, even at the time I was retiring, began contracting out work. The Department of Transportation, this began under Tommy Thompson, contracting out engineering work when we had the people in staff to do the work. My employees would ask me, why are we contracting this out? We have people to do this. And I just told them, because those people make political contributions and we don't.
Professor Cohn.
I couldn't agree more with your caller. I mean, I think if you get rid of the right to collectively bargain, essentially many of these employees are just going to be at the mercy of management. And I think it's clearly it's a fundamental right that many workers have fought for across the country. And I think it, without a doubt, is a concerted effort to remove that right, for political reasons.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying trying to figure out, considering the fact that there were a lot of union members, there was opposition to this very idea back in March. I'm trying to figure out why a governor would risk his future career and his success as a governor on an issue like this when he's not stupid. He must have known that a lot of people had significant problems with it.
Well, you know, a couple of reasons here in Ohio. Number one, you know, it could just be, hubris. And, you know, looking at the results of the 2010 election and maybe interpreting them, in a way that would give them a false sense of confidence. That's certainly the first thing. And secondly, we're not sure here in Ohio if Governor Kasich is even interested in running for a second term. I mean, clearly he's a national figure. He's already run for president once. And there's a lot of speculation that he is positioning himself to be a vice presidential candidate or a potential presidential candidate down the road. So he is, in terms of his position on this, it may not be popular right now in Ohio, but it certainly may be popular with some of the interests that would like to see him get to a higher office.
Mm. Dave, thanks for your call. Gerard in La Crescent, Minnesota. Hi, Gerard.
Hi. Well, a lot of the comments that I was going to make, the previous caller made. But one thing I would like to point out about, public workers and this idea that they need to contribute, this really bothers me. And I just feel like, like the other caller said, it's in lieu of, these contributions and these benefits are in lieu of higher pay that the public workers have to give up. And I also like to point out the fact that a lot of these people have multiple degrees, which they're also paying for to get to that point. And lastly, which really bugs me the most, is instead of complaining about people in unions getting getting benefits, why don't you set up your own union or get together with your fellow workers and set up your own union instead of trying to break down the unions of others?
All right. Thank you, Gerard, very much for your call. Alex in Toma, and then we will switch guests because I know Professor Cohen has another interview scheduled. Alex, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, has the bills we've passed in Wisconsin regarding the collective bargaining rights, has it actually helped to balance our budget in any way? And if it has, could it help Ohio too? And I also just wanted to say I'm a truck driver, and I actually make more than the average police officer or firefighter, and I don't have to deal with criminals or fires, and I think it's just kind of ridiculous that people would think that they get paid too much.
Professor Cohen.
You know, I don't know whether or not it's actually helped the budget or not. I haven't really focused on that. I've seen evidence going both ways, certainly on that. If you ask the people pushing this, they'll say absolutely it's going to help the budget. And people against it, will say it would not help. So I don't really know. I was just going to say, too, and
sure.
The previous caller is absolutely right. Public employees are already paying for some of their benefits, and these benefits, the good benefits, are there to offset really lower wages. And, if you take teachers, for example, a lot of teachers are required to go on and get, higher degrees, and they have to pay for that themselves. And people really don't realize that.
Well, we'll see tons and tons of television ads over the next year telling us it's not working or it is working, won't we?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Be prepared.
Thank you so much, Professor Cohen. I hope it was fun for you to be back in Wisconsin for
Absolutely.
A while.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Professor David Cohen, professor of political science and fellow in the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. He is a native of Milwaukee. We're just joining. We're having a different guest join us now for the remainder of the program. All your phone calls. We're still on the same subject, and that's what happened in terms of the vote in Ohio on issue number two, which went down 61 to 39%. Paul Sarasik is our guest now, professor and chair of political science at Youngstown State University, where he also directs the Pre-Law Center. He is the author most recently of San Antonio versus Rodriguez and the Pursuit of Equal Education, the Debate Over Discrimination in School Funding, and he is the co-author of the Encyclopedia of American Parties, Campaign, and Elections. He is with us to analyze what happened in Ohio as well, and we'll continue phone calls. The number again is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, I promise you, we'll get to the emails with this guest in a few moments, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Paul Sarasik, thank you very much for being with us.
No problem. It's great to be here.
So your overview of what happened in Ohio yesterday, why was the vote as strong as it was against this?
Well, you know, Senate Bill 5, as we call it here, the bill in question, really was unpopular before it got passed. If you looked at polling data, which was out there even before the November 2010 elections, you know, when Governor Kasich and the Republicans come into office, showed that voters really didn't want the legislature to go after public service unions. However, that's what they did almost immediately after, you know, being inaugurated into office. You know, unlike in Wisconsin, you know, this legislation in Ohio was really far-reaching. It didn't just go after teachers. It also went after firefighters and police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you could see right away as this was going forward that it was going to be fairly easy to campaign against it.
And was it, as our other guest has suggested, a tactical error to go after police officers and firefighters?
Sure, because, you know, voters are much more sympathetic to people who are risking their lives. And as much as we may, you know, respect and value teachers, they're not running into burning buildings, you know, unlike firemen and policemen. So you need to be really very careful, I think, if you're going to do anything that looks like you're weakening, you know, their position, because there's just a lot of sympathy for safety forces.
And do you think the vote would have been different if police officers and firefighters were exempted?
It would have been easier. It would have been more difficult to run the campaign because the way the anti, you know, Senate Bill 5 campaign went in Ohio, or the Issue 2 campaign, called both things, was they talked a lot about staffing levels. And a lot of the commercials, you know, they had firefighters, you know, coming on the radio saying, you know, here's how you can protect yourself from fire, you know, make sure that your outlets are covered and things like that, and vote against Issue 2. So the argument was that because they couldn't negotiate staffing levels, that there wouldn't be enough safety forces out there. You could make the same argument, maybe, you know, about teachers, that the classroom size would be too large or something like that. But that doesn't really hit people as directly, I think, as, you know, when you're talking about not having enough police available.
Right. Here's how you can protect yourself in case there's a fire. That doesn't fly.
Right. So, no, I think that this was an enormous tactical error. I mean, you could see how Republicans could have crafted a much narrower bill. Not only perhaps not targeting firefighters and police officers, but not going after, you know, collective bargaining maybe, you know, so directly. Something like fair share, right, where people, whether they're members of the union or not, have to pay into it. You could have passed a bill eliminating fair share, and it would have been really difficult for the unions to fight that because, it looks like sort of freedom of choice. I don't want to be in the union, so I don't want to pay. And once they had done that, the unions would have had less money probably available to them for any fights in the future, and then they could have taken on, you know, retirement and health care. You know, when you poll all these things individually, they're actually kind of popular with Ohio voters.
Mm-hmm.
But you put it all into a big package, and it just becomes, you know, I think, a political disaster.
Well, why didn't the governor go that direction?
Well, the governor didn't propose this bill. This bill was proposed by a senator, Shannon Jones. And one of the interesting things that I'd like to know is what kind of conversations went on among the Republicans in Columbus before this went forward. You have, you know, the current, you know, Speaker of the House of Representatives in Ohio, Bill Batchelder, who's really an old-time Republican politician. He's been around for a long time. He knows the lay of the land in Ohio politics. And it's hard to believe that he would have been on board for something, you know, this extensive. You know, there's really an interesting history to all this. You know, back in 1958, there was a proposal to amend the Ohio Constitution to make it a right-to-work state. And
even though the Republican parties were the Republican Party was blamed for this, the sort of more crafty long-term Republican leadership, Ray Bliss, they were actually against it at the time, thinking it would be devastating for the Republicans. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the more sort of seasoned Republicans down in Columbus really weren't very happy when this bill came forward.
Hmm. Let's take an email. Tammy from Wisconsin Rapids. This issue is not about union members' willingness to pay. It's about the right to, for them as a group, to negotiate working conditions and pay. This is, to me, more a freedom to speak issue than anything else. I'm not a union member or a public employee. Is that what it is? Freedom of speech issue?
Well, you know, yes. I mean, you know, to a degree, the freedom of workers to sort of collectively bargain. But, you know, that wasn't banned by Senate Bill 5. You could still negotiate. You could still talk to management about, you know, what you thought was fair. But, you know, you couldn't strike. So what was taken away is sort of the main weapon, essentially, to get your way in the end. And there were certain things, like staffing levels, that were, you know, non-negotiable. So it was something, you know, you couldn't talk about. I don't know whether I would say it's a freedom of speech issue necessarily. You could still, you know, say it if you wanted to. You know, let's get real. This is about labor negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Well, as she suggested, though, isn't it about your ability to negotiate what your conditions are, how long a school day is, how long the school year will be, and pay? Did it not include those?
You could negotiate pay. You were still allowed to negotiate pay. It's a complicated bill. I mean, what it basically said is you could negotiate pay, but if you reached an impasse, basically the final best offer of the political authority that you were negotiating with was going to be in place. You couldn't go to what you can now to sort of, you know, detailed fact-finding with binding arbitration.
I see. We go next to Ken in Milwaukee. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, Kathleen. I was wondering if the professor could tell me whether or not there's a history in Ohio for the protective services on other issues involving labor have always agreed with the conservative point of view and have been supported by them, to reflect that by this legislation that failed, there's a history, and only because they were included in this negative aspect is that why they voted against it. And my reason for mentioning is that in Wisconsin, the government has always excluded safety people from negative legislation involving labor. So I was just trying to do that comparison, Ohio to Wisconsin.
No, I think that's a good point. I can't really give you any specifics. I'm trying to remember, but I know oftentimes, you know, some of the, at least the locals, you know, representing like police officers, for example, will support, you know, Republican attorney general candidates, you know, on sort of on law and order line and things like that. So yeah, I think, you know, there sometimes is a split between the unions. With some safety forces sometimes siding with Republicans. So that may be why in Wisconsin, right, they you don't go after policemen and firemen, but in Ohio, they're included. I was kind of looking sort of at the more basic politics and the message of this, but, right, I think you could also take a look at, you know, who supports who in the past and make an argument that this was not a very wise political decision.
As you know, a recall drive will begin in just a few days in the state of Wisconsin. Can we make a leap here? Because this happened in Ohio, it means blank will happen in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I don't know enough about Wisconsin politics to really to talk about what you're thinking up there. You know, we don't have the recall in Ohio, so you don't have that option. You know, keep in mind, something that's being missed, I think, in this is that in Ohio, it wasn't sort of that clear of a message in terms of political parties, at least. You know, you had issue two, which was clearly an issue that the Democratic Party wanted voters to vote against. You know, they wanted to repeal Senate Bill 5. But there was also issue three on the ballot, which was about the health care mandate of sort of the, you know, it didn't talk directly about the health care reform law, but it was clearly aimed at, you know, against, you know, Obamacare. Mm-hmm. and the mandate. And that issue actually, or that constitutional amendment actually passed by a wider margin than issue two failed.
That's interesting.
So you may have sort of mixed messages being sent out there by the electorate. You know, I think what the electorate was saying in Ohio is they kind of want moderation. You know, that they think that you know, Senate Bill 5 was too big. It did too much. And they also may think that the health care reform was too big and it did too much. So, you know, they're looking for sort of moderation maybe by both parties.
Our guest this half hour is Dr. Paul Sarasik. He's a professor and chair of political science at Youngstown State University, where he also directs the Pre-Law Center. Our phone number, Ken, thanks for your call. One line open at 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll have several guests looking at the legal obligations here, the moral obligations, and the role of sports in perhaps continuing to look the other way on certain incredibly important issues to keep a program thriving and alive. We'll be looking at the Penn State University sex abuse case, and we'll have three guests with us, our number two. 800-486-8655. And here is another email that has come in from Ken and Eau Claire. Professor, how much of the legislation in Wisconsin, Ohio, and similar states that are very conservative GOP took over the work of ALEC and groups like Americans for Prosperity?
I'm not clear. I don't know about Wisconsin, but in Ohio at least, I don't know. You know, I'm not that familiar with the group that's being referenced by the email. But you know, I'm not aware that a lot of this sort of came from the outside. It's simply consistent, I think, with you know some conservative rhetoric on this. The idea was that we're spending too much on government, and the way to get a hold of that is to limit the rights of public service unions to bargain for higher wages, and you know to bargain to not pay as much for their health care, you know, for retirement. So I don't think you need to look at this as sort of necessarily a broader you know conspiracy out there or something. This is just simply consistent with the Republican message. And in this case, what happened is, you know, I think you had an overreach. I think there's a remarkable parallel here to when the Democrats come in power in Washington, D.C. in 2008, that, you know, health care coverage for all is consistent with the Democratic Party's platform. So it was natural for them to move forward on that. But, you know, in each case, what happens is I think politicians overread their mandates. And, you know, they think that the American people are necessarily as liberal or as conservative as they are. And the American people seem, you know, right down the middle sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So the idea that the Koch brothers, who have been involved in Wisconsin, were not active and did not put a lot of money into the referendum issue in Ohio?
Not nearly as much as they did in you know as they were around for the Wisconsin the different votes for the judicial election right in your recall. There just wasn't that much money spent by the anti Senate Bill 5 side or the sort of pro issue 2 side in Ohio. They were just outspent from the get-go,
mm-hmm.
by particularly groups like the you know National Education Association. But also what was curious, and I'm pretty sure you saw this in Wisconsin also, is this merging of the private unions with the public sector unions, kind of working together. You know, you have the NEA essentially working with the AFL-CIO. And you know, even though the public sector unions weren't directly affected by this legislation, I'm sorry, the private sector unions weren't directly affected, everyone clearly saw this as sort of an attack on labor unions in general. So you had that sort of banding together and working together. And that, I think, may be crucial in 2012, you know, particularly in swing states like Ohio and you know, Wisconsin. In the end, when you have these 50-50 states that could go either way, get out the vote is what's important, getting your voters to the polls. And the fact is, in Ohio right now, and probably in Wisconsin, you've really organized the main get-out-the-vote engine in both states, which is the labor unions. You know, they've made connections. They've learned each other's phone numbers. They've learned how to act politically. You know, in both states, you've had people probably who never actively engaged in politics before, now have gone door to door, have made phone calls, and they're comfortable doing that. So the Democratic Party may be able to ride on that in 2012 in both states,
mm-hmm.
To have a much stronger turnout than we might expect in favor of, you know, most likely the reelection of Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. Either that or people aren't going to vote.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is energized, and of course, people don't just vote. You've got to get them there.
Right.
And so, you know, these get out the vote campaigns are just so significant. I remember in Ohio back in 2004 when you had George W. Bush being reelected against John Kerry, and the big complaints of the labor unions in Ohio was that the Kerry campaign really didn't make use of the labor unions in the way that they should have to get out the vote. Whereas, you know, the Bush team, you know, made use of the churches and religious organizations and really, really had an impressive, you know, 48-hour program, as they called it, to sort of get out the vote. And, you know, that makes a difference. So, you know, maybe voters will be turned off, but still, you know, both parties know who is likely to vote for them. And they need to get those voters to the polls. And right now, the Democrats have had a big win in Ohio. And I think that's going to motivate them, saying, okay, this is just a start. Now we can carry this forward into 2012. Look what we can do when we work together.
Mm-hmm. Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Kathleen. Wonderful show, and I feel it's really balanced, as usual, with NPR. What I really thought was interesting about this issue is, one, the people being able to vote for the people that they are negotiating with for a contract. And then if collective bargaining is truly a right, what do we do about the military or physicians who might have a very different outlook if they develop or feel that they have the right to collectively bargain? I'll take my answer off. Thanks much.
Thank you.
I think the caller's point was that it's problematic when we start seeing you know, collective bargaining as a right rather than perhaps a privilege. And, you know, a lot of we use rights to talk a lot, I think. You know, when we're talking about things that are important to us. You know, we talk about, for example, the right to an education. And I kind of know something about that because I wrote a book on it a few years ago. And even though most of us would think in sort of common parlance, right, that this is a right, if you look at it as a legal matter or a constitutional matter, you know, there's nothing in the federal Constitution that says you have a right to bargain. And incidentally, there's nothing in the federal Constitution that says you have a right to an education. So this is a little bit, you know, different. But, you know, I understand the rhetoric. You know, there's a lot of rhetoric on both sides. And calling something, you know, a right that's being attacked, and that motivates people. And, you know, it helps your side. I mean, in Ohio, you know, we talk all the time about how the right to bargain is, you know, a basic human right. And then there you're playing on top of actually some sort of UN, United Nations ideas, not something that's actually in the federal Constitution.
Bob in Prairie du Chien. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Good morning. I hear rhetoric on both sides, and I hear demagoguing on both sides, and a lot of this just serves to divide people. Something you just said about the collective bargaining rights, in that, and it doesn't even really need to be an independent right, because it's included in the freedom to assemble, which is double-edged. It's also the freedom not to assemble. And a lot of this, you have people on both sides just dividing people on these little issues that really shouldn't matter at all on the federal government stage. They shouldn't be in that purview. And on the state, this shouldn't even be a question. And because you have the right to assemble and you have the right to bargain, but at the same time, you don't have the right to force someone to join your assembly if they don't want to be. That would be the right to work issue.
Right. I mean, I think the caller, makes a good point. I mean, there is, you know, we are comfortable, I think, as Americans, thinking that, you know, we have the right to sort of assemble together, to associate, you know, the freedom of association, associate with each other, and bargain collectively. However, you know, all I would point out is that if, let's say, Senate Bill 5 had been upheld, I really don't think that if somebody had gone into federal court arguing that this is a violation of the First Amendment, that they would have won. It's kind of, that's all I'm saying. But the larger point is that this rhetoric, you know, it works politically, you know, on both sides. It gets the troops excited to get out there and campaign, and that's what you need. But one of the problems is that it makes it very difficult to start compromising when you use sort of extreme rhetoric on either side. And ultimately, you know, we do have some real problems. Everybody knows in Wisconsin and Ohio, we have budget problems. We have economic problems. Well, we have to do something to deal with, you know, retirement systems, healthcare, and things like that. And, you know, perhaps we really need to come together, and the political rhetoric takes us in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the governor of Ohio is going to do next? Is he spending the week devising a new strategy, or does he already have one?
I don't think, and I could be completely wrong. Obviously, I don't have any special, you know, pipeline to what the governor is thinking. But when I look at it politically, I would think that Republicans right now are going to stay as far away from these types of issues as they can. Mm. You know, because, you know, right now what they did is they really, you know, they got the labor unions angry and motivated. And the last thing they want to do is keep that anger level and that motivation level up as we enter 2012. You know, what they're saying is that they're going to step back now and take a look at what the voters told them and sort of digest that and think about what they're going to do next. I don't think whatever they're going to do is going to happen before 2012, though. I think they're going to be very quiet on labor issues between now and 2012 and sort of talk much more generally, you know, about budgetary issues. I think I'm sure the governor is going to talk a lot about how he balanced the budget, what he did, look for job growth in Ohio if there is some, and sort of talk about that. And those are going to be the messages. I don't think you're going to have this big any big legislation coming out between now and 2012.
Hmm. Professor Cerasi, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our guest this half hour, Professor Paul Cerasic. He is chair of the Political Science Department at Youngstown State University. He also directs the pre-law university or center there at that university. And we also thank Professor David Cohen, professor of political science at the University of Akron. And thanks to all of you for being with us to talk about the vote that took place yesterday on issue 2 in Ohio. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour, and thanks to Chrissy for doing on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. And we'll be with you for more. What is today? Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday. Wednesday conversation in just a moment, looking at the huge sex abuse case at Penn State. So thanks for listening to this hour. Stick around.